Blog Talk Radio.
An old woman can sit. An old man can sit. A chump can sit. A coward can sit. Anything can sit. Well, you and I have been sitting long enough, and it's time today for us to start doing some standing and some fighting to back that up.
Welcome to another edition. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. You have got yourself at the right place, at the right time. And I just wanted to take a moment out to thank you for tuning in to Progressive News Weekly, where week in and week out, we bring you news and information that's culled from around the world. In case you didn't know who that opening little segue was, that was the one and only Malcolm, the Malcolm brother, Malcolm X. And it was just a little excerpt from Standing he talked about. Today, without further ado, for those of you on the mail list, you know who we have. We are very short, limited time with this brother, near and dear to me, because he's not just talking the talk, he's walking the talk. We have with us today Mr. Lawrence Ham, community activist and civil rights leader, as I say, one who truly fights the fight and not just talks the talk. And today we're going to have a short discourse about what's going on, as Brother Marvin Gaye once put it so eloquently. And this is going to be the beginning of a series. So without further ado, we have numerous guests coming on tonight. Some brothers from Texas are going to come on and talk about what they're doing down there. And it's just going to be a good, not just talk the talk, but walk the talk, because we're going to talk about solutions and things we need to be doing. So without further ado, we have a short time period with Mr. Lawrence Ham. Brother Lawrence, what a pleasure.
Good evening. How are you? Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you, Brother Lawrence? There's so much going on and has been going on. I know you don't have but a few moments with us.
Right.
So just tell us some things you're doing, what we should be doing, what's not happening, what's happening that shouldn't be happening. I know we only have a few short minutes with you. Go ahead, brother. You've got the airwaves.
Well,
and you're already blowing up our lines. They're starting to pack up already. Anytime you come on, they just blow up like that.
Well, I think the most important thing I could say tonight is that the cutoff date for voter registration in New Jersey is October the 18th. That means that there are about 19 days left for people who are not registered to get registered so that they can vote in the November 8th election for president and members of Congress of the United States. This is a very, very important election. I cannot overemphasize how important it is. And I think those people who have been following the primary season and who are following the Democratic and Republican conventions and who have been following the most recent, the very first presidential debate between the candidates of the two parties, which occurred on Monday night, understand that this election is critical in terms of the interests of African Americans, of other people of color, of working people, poor people, the middle class, of young people, college students, really almost everybody has their interests on the line with this election. And for those people who say that voting doesn't make a difference, let me just say this, because I don't have much time and I can't go into this in depth. But the next president, the person who is elected in about 40 days from now, that person will appoint as many as four justices to the United States Supreme Court. That means that the entire complexion, both when I say complexion, I'm talking about the type of jurisprudence that will usher forth or issue forth from this court for the next 50 years will be determined by the next president of the United States. Those of us who remember the civil rights movement, remember the Black Power movement, remember how we had to fight for the passage of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and the Higher Education Act and all the things that come along with that. We know that over the last 40 years, it has been Supreme Court decisions, a Supreme Court that has been shaped by the Republican presidents, Nixon, Reagan, George W. Bush Sr., George H.W. Bush, his son. They have packed the Supreme Court with right-wing judges who have really rolled back some of the most important provisions of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act and the Higher Education Act. And I have to say, had it not been for the death of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, who was killed in what I can still consider a mysterious hunting accident, nobody has quite explained what happened. Because the court was even, that is, eight members with four conservatives and four liberals, had Antonin Scalia not been killed and been on the Supreme Court, we would have lost whatever remnants of affirmative action programs we have for college students. They would have upheld the racist voter ID laws in North Carolina, and that would have set a precedent and enabled other states to do the same thing. And the labor union would have lost its financial base with the ruling in the Richardson case, whereas the state Supreme Court had ruled that unions can't deduct dues from their members' checks. Had those three decisions, had Antonin Scalia been on the Supreme Court, we would have lost in all three of those cases. As a result of him not being on the court, when there's a split court and the vote is 4-4, the decisions of the it goes back down to the lower courts, and you know the decision stands. So what I'm saying is that situation with a 4-4 split Supreme Court, four liberals, four conservatives, that situation is going to change after the new president takes office in January of 2017. So we must vote. There are 1,001 reasons I could give, but I can't give right now because I have to go into the POP meeting. But the most important thing I could tell you is this. If you're not registered to vote, get registered. You have until October the 18th to register. And then after October 18th, we must work on voter mobilization. We must get people to the polls. People need to come out to the polls and vote like we voted 2008 when we elected Barack Obama and in 2012 when we reelected him. If we come out and vote in those numbers, then Donald Trump will be defeated. And I have no qualms in saying that letting Donald Trump become president of the United States of America, letting him win this election would be the worst possible thing that the American people could do. So Trump must be defeated. So I urge people to come out to get registered before October 18th, and then after October 18th, let us all work together to get people out to the polls on Election Day, which is Tuesday, November the 8th.
Wow.
Well, you know what, brother? I know you've got to run to the pop meeting. Can you take 30 seconds to just spell out, because we have a number of new callers, what your organization is, and if someone wants to donate or support your organization, how they is the website, who do they call to get information on what you're doing?
Well, yes. The People's Organization for Progress is an all-volunteer grassroots organization that works for racial, social, and economic justice. We in Newark, New Jersey, in fact, I'm sitting outside of the Abyssinian Baptist Church where we have our General Assembly meeting. We meet, our organization meets every week, every Thursday, 6:30 p.m. at the Abyssinian Baptist Church in Newark, New Jersey, 224 West Kinney Street. We meet every Thursday at 6:30, and I'm getting ready to go into the meeting now. However, we have branches of the People's Organization for Progress. We have 11 branches throughout the state of New Jersey, New York City, and we have a branch in North Carolina. And one of those branches is in your area, my brother, in Plainfield, New Jersey.
And you know,
so
I'm in it and on
so
it.
That's right. So if you want to work with the Plainfield branch of the People's Organization for Progress, you can call Stephen Hatcher at 908-731-1518, 908-731-1518. And if you want to contact the the parent organization of the People's Organization for Progress, I guess you could say the headquarters, so to speak, you can call us at 973-801-0001, 973-801-0001. If you want to learn about the People's Organization for Progress, you can go to our website, which is www.njpop.org, www.njpop.org. You can go to our website. We also have several People's Organization for Progress Facebook pages. We have one page where people can leave, where we advertise our activities, and people can leave comments. Just go to Facebook, the People's Organization for Progress. And we have a People's Organization for Progress photo and video page on Facebook. There's so many photos and videos, we had to set up a separate page just for that. So you can go to Facebook, go to the People's Organization for Progress comment page on Facebook, or go to Facebook, People's Organization for Progress, go to our video page, video and photo page, and you can see the activities and work of the People's Organization for Progress. So that's basically how people can get in contact. Our organization is open to everyone. You can join the People's Organization for Progress by filling out a membership form. I believe you can get the form off of our website, print it out, send it in. Our annual dues are $25 per year. That makes you a voting member. If you fill out the membership form and you send it in, you will become what we call, and you send it in without your dues, you will become what's called a supporting member. And you will be notified about the activities of the organization. But you can only be a voting member if you pay your annual dues. And the annual dues are only $25 a year. So we urge people to join. We have many members from all walks of life who are a part of the People's Organization for Progress. So I invite everyone in your listening audience. We only have one requirement, just one. Do you want justice? Whew. If you want justice, then you should join the People's Organization for Progress.
Mm. All right, my brother. You know, you are like a true brother. You are a brother, but I mean a really blood brother. So with that said, I'll tell you, you know your folks are waiting.
The man, they hot. Man, I'm late again.
I know that. So listen,
they're gonna
be reaching out because
office.
What I would like to do, and that's why another reason I'm pushing you out, because I don't want you to say, Daryl, we did it again. I told you I had to be off by 1:45, and I was 5 minutes. So I want to push you because I want to, between now and Election Day, and we're not going to hold you for 10 or 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
5 to 10 minutes, I want you to join me because we're going to open up with this voter push and educating people. The lines have blown up, as they always do when you're on, because I sent out my memo, you know, that you were going to be on. And
right.
we're gonna make a push with this, because all we can do is what we can do. That's
right.
all. All we can
That's
do.
All. That's all.
And what was that question?
Right.
What's the requirement again in order to be a member?
There's only one requirement. Do you want justice? And if you want justice, then join the People's Organization for Progress. I got to go, brother. All right. Take care now.
All right. Peace and blessings
right.
to you. For those
right.
of you who just tuned in, you were listening to truly a crusader, and that's no lie. I advise you, encourage you to go to the website, People's Organization for Progress. This is an organization that is making strides. And I believe we need to be talking about chapters across the country. Not that you're not a member and you're not doing other things. I mean, you could be a member of a civic organization. In fact, our next guest is another dear and near brother of mine who is a member of a fraternity. And we're going to be talking about some of the work that fraternities are doing and will be doing. You could be a member of a men's organization in your local church, as I am. But the bottom line is, what are you doing? And as Brother Lawrence Ham said, the question you need to ask yourself is, do you want justice? Because if the grassroots don't step up and demand justice, it's not we're going to ask for it, demand justice, it's not going to be had. It's just that simple. So as I said, I see the lines have blown up. We have quite a few listeners here who I'm just looking at some numbers I recognize who have a voice and are not shy about expressing their voice. So this should be a very lively show. And with that said, we have another guest with very limited time, and that is Mr. Kevin Porter. And I'm not going to take a lot of time for his intro. He's been on many times. He's truly a partner of mine and of Progressive News. But just to say, Mr. Kevin, I like to affectionately call him Dr. Porter. Mr. Kevin Porter is an author, engineer. He's the executive director of Man-Made Mentoring, his own program that is designed to mentor our black youth. Do we need that or not? His latest book, Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, and Mentoring African-American Males, is being met with rave reviews. So he is also one to believe that we must utilize those organizations we are in. He's a Mason. He's a Kappa. For those that don't know, that's Alpha Kappa Alpha. Kappa Alpha Psi. And he utilizes the organizations that he is in to move forward. So, Kevin, without further ado, I know you have a very limited time, so if it's 5 minutes, we'll take it. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
All right, Brother Clark. Thank you for having me on, and thank you for being back in the seat so that we can get this movement going, and I appreciate the introduction. My time, I am squeezed for time, but I'll give you what I have. And I think the main thing of our the program and why we're here today is because we see so much injustice in our society. And we want to protest. We want action. I think the question is, how do we move forward? Because we have to have a plan, and that plan has to have some strategic action so that we can make change. The question I ask, or the question other people may look at us and say, why are they protesting? Okay. is what has been done by the police a crime, or is it just a civil issue? I say it's a crime. However, we can make it both a criminal action and a civil action. If you don't have a gun and if you are killed by anyone, a police officer or whatever it is, your rights have been violated. Your civil rights have been violated. How do we protect each member in our community's civil rights? And that's what we have to come together as a group and decide, what do we need to do? How do we make change? And that change is going to require involvement from the total community. Because when I say total community, I mean Black, white, Hispanic. We have to come together, because what's going on in the community, we, from a Black perspective, look at it as they're targeting Blacks. But we also are on the side of right. Therefore, what has been happening is wrong. And our community, our collective community, have to see this as a wrong. And if there's a wrong that is going on in our community, everyone has to take action. Because if you don't, that wrong will affect everyone. And it is affecting us as a collective group. Either we're affected by the tragedy, or some people are affected by the fact that they feel like they're being targeted as far as for guilt, and that could be the police, that could be other whites. So until we come together and agree upon what we see as a wrong and that we need to correct it, because it has to be corrected. I was confronted today by a white gentleman, and we talked about the police killings. And what do? Well, there was a Black police officer who killed a Black guy. Is that racism? And I said, let's wipe racism out. Let's wipe the fact of Black and white. Is it wrong what happened? Yes, it was wrong. He was unjustly killed. It was wrong. And until we look at it from that perspective, we know that there's racism in our community. We know that. But in order for us to get change, we have to attack it from the point of it's wrong. And if we go at it from the point that it's a wrong action, then we can do some things to change it. Now, how do we do that? How do we get our community involved? Because we're at the point now where we don't have to see another killing. We know there's going to be another one. We don't have to wait. And marching and protesting is great, but white people will wait you out. The people who we are targeting will wait you out, and they know that at some point in time it'll die out. They know also that they can make it appear, the media can make it appear as this is a one in South Carolina, one in Chicago, one in Alabama, one in Cleveland, one in New York, one in Texas, another in Texas. They try to portray it as it's a one thing. We have to group them all together and then present it, present our case, because that's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to present our case as a collective group to the media outlet. Our message must be clear that this is not a one-time thing. This is not isolated. This is not police officers who are killing people because they're not complying. This is a way of life for some of these police officers. Their actions are out of control. If you have a gun or you are surrounded by other police officers and you kill someone, then you committed a crime. The example that our community is faced with is the fact that you can have a Rodney King surrounded by so many police officers that are beating them and beating them and beating them. And they're committing a crime, and then they don't get charged for it. So now you have iPhones, you have body cams that are taping these actions, and nobody is being prosecuted for it. So we have to come up with our message and build our case against the police departments and against these cities and against these states. Now, how do we do that? we have to have people who are in the legal profession that's got to help us. We're going to have to collect people who's in the legal profession, people who are in the judicial profession, as police officer, what have you. We're going to have to team up with our community leaders, groups like the NAACP. We have to come together, and our message has to be clear. And we have to buy TV ads. We have to buy radio. We got to send that message of we can no longer be affected by this terrorist act. And we have to have one voice, and that voice has to continue to come week after week after week. And we have to address all the lives that have died. Often you see on television where they do a ceremony for those soldiers who have died in war in Iraq or Afghanistan. We need to have that same type of memorial or remembrance of those who have died at the hands of police officers, and constantly remind our community and those outside of our community that there's injustice going on, and we need to put a plan together to bring attention to it, build our case, and then allow someone to bring this case to the court, to the government at a federal level or at a state level. Brother Clark, you got any questions? This is just my point of view and how I feel like we can move forward, but it's going to require a collective group, and it's going to require a message that has to be sent on television, on the radio, on the newspaper, so that people in the general population understand the hurt that we're going through. They can understand the terroristic feelings we have when you drive by police officers or you might get stopped or what have you. The fear that is going on, the anxiety, the distrust, displeasure, and now we're becoming more distant from people who are supposed to subserve and protect their community. So that's what I have to say today, Brother Clark, and I think that our viewers are interested in moving forward, and we need to provide a forum so that we can come together, and that's the key. And we can do that through our civic groups, our fraternities, NAACPs, the People for Power group. We need to get these groups active, and we need to present a common plan.
Let me mention something here. I was talking to a brother, and you and I have had this dialogue many times, Mr. Porter, about the importance. And we heard also Brother Ham talk about that. You know, if you're not doing something, then you're doing nothing. It's not complicated. And
right.
There's no fence. And so I was having a conversation with one of your brothers on another level, one of the local Kappas, and I had talked with him earlier in the summer, and it was a wonderful dialogue. And it's back to that conversation that you and I had about the misnomer about our fraternities and, you know, the image that they have. In fact, I know he's actually listening. I'm gonna open his mic up and give him an opportunity, because what you and I were talking about is we need to galvanize these organizations. We need to galvanize our various fraternities, because you all were founded on civic and service of our African. And if you could, maybe between you and, I'm hoping that it'll be okay that this brother will join us. And from the conversations that we've had, much like yours and mine, Brother Lovett, you know, is on point. And again, he's one of your fellow Kappa brothers, but it's so important, listeners, whether it's your church, whether it's your street club, if you're in an organization, it's time now to really utilize the organizations, most of which were established for our well-being,
to take that mantle and utilize it. I'm going to ask Brother Lovett. Brother Lovett, a fellow Kappa, are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Good evening, Daryl, and good evening, Brother Porter.
Good evening, Brother Lovett. How you doing?
Just fine. I am, just by way of introduction, I'm a member of the Plainfield Alumni Chapter, Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated. I'm nearing to be 28 years in the fraternity. You know, I pledged, or I became a member through Eta Epsilon Chapter at Rutgers University. And relative to what Daryl has been speaking about, I would say, and I am very active, I used to be the president of the chapter, I'm still an officer. One of the, I think, focuses that actually is kind of current today is really our mentorship program with our Kappa League. That has really kind of exploded across the country. And we realize the situation which our young brothers are up against and are struggling. And we have a kind of all-out effort across the country to work with our young men, help them, and really train them in the ways of leadership, because that's one of our mottos, leadership and training for leadership. And we spent quite a bit of effort in that vein. Now, that doesn't kind of, I'd say, belittle some of the other efforts in which we work in most of our communities. Our particular chapter in the Plainfield area spends a lot of time in our communities relative to the local churches. We do a very good job relative to raising funds and for scholarship for our high school students, as well as raising getting donations, particularly food donations, for needy families kind of in our neighboring communities. But I will say we spent a good amount of time just on mentorship with our young brothers.
And Mr. Porter,
yes,
you and I were talking about trying to put together a coalition, and you had even drawn a model up that we had discussed, though. It's almost a year now.
Right.
You can see that Brother Lovett is, you know, as I have told you, has expressed exactly what you've been telling me in terms of what fraternities really are doing. They get that image via television. Yeah, we're stepping, or we're the party group. But between the two of you, you know, share a little bit on how these fraternities were established. I mean, the premise by which they were actually brought into fruition.
Okay. Brother Lovett, if you allow me, I'm going on 31 years in the fraternity. So, and from Iota Omega chapter, University of Missouri in Rolla, called IQ. Well, listeners, our fraternities and most of our fraternities, between the Alphas, Kappas, Omegas, what have you, and the Deltas, AKAs, were established in the early 1900s. Ours was 1911. And if you can kind of imagine what was going on in the early 1900s, that discrimination was rampant. The lack of education and opportunity was full-blown. We were limited to where we can go to school. We were limited as to the fields we were going to. So when a few men were on the campuses, and this was Indiana University, they rarely saw each other because they were African American and the school was predominantly white, and they would go days or weeks without even seeing each other. And they were familiar with the white fraternities, but there was, at this time, only one African-American fraternity, and that was Alpha Phi Alpha. However, our founders decided that that was not the organization for them. They wanted to do something different because they wanted to do something where their focus was on the achievement of each other, helping each of their members reach a higher status and to push each other to support each other. And on Indiana's campus, they didn't have that. When you are the only one in a class and other people are not supporting you, then you need that support. So it was very important that we establish something that will provide that support, that moral support, that social support for African Americans on their campus. And then to take that support out into the community, because we knew at that time, our founders knew at that time, that to maintain our growth, we needed to view our youth as a very, very important aspect of our future. Because if you can't reach your youth, then you will lack the resources when it's time to go to college. Because it's difficult to go to college. And if you don't have anyone to go back, try to encourage, try to help, then the opportunity for their growth would be very limited. So that was one very important thing, and the social and civic aspect of it was very, very important. One of our founders, Elder Watson Diggs, after he was graduated from college, volunteered to go to the war, and he was recognized for that. He volunteered and made others recognize that he was a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, and those are the things that we do. We make sacrifices in our community. We volunteer. We enlist in the military. We teach. We're lawyers. We're engineers. We're professional people, and we believe that our community can be strong if we lead our community. And as a collective group, we have to be involved. You have to be involved. And as Brother Lovett has indicated, that the Kappa League program has been very, very instrumental in helping young men reach higher goals. Our communities are faced with a detrimental view of young men going to jail, young men in crime, young men having a negative view. But if we who have made it through college and made it in careers, we have to go back. I'm in the schools, and I'll be in the schools. I'm always in the schools volunteering. On my lunch break, I met with parents yesterday, working with young men, establishing them, preparing them for an academic bowl that's going to be in January. Last year, I took 21 boys, 7 groups, and we competed in an academic bowl against 20 other guys, and our group came in first place. And what it did was it helped them understand that the only time that you can be recognized as a champion is not when you're playing football or basketball or baseball. It's in the classroom, academic, with your mind. And these young men, and most of them love sports, and like we all did at 13, 12, but they recognize now that the biggest challenge is in the classroom. The biggest props is when you get A's and you recognize for being what they call a dual threat brother, who is athletic and academically superior. So that's the message we have to send. But as a fraternity, we also need to recognize not only are we have to train those who are coming behind us, but we also have to come and address the issues that occur now. And we have a strong collective organization that we need to galvanize ourselves and address this killings by the police. We just need to come at it. We need to get our Panhellenic group together and our Divine Nine, and we need to address what's going on as a collective group. Because we have powerful congressmen, powerful lawyers, we have powerful people in our organizations that if we come together as a whole, as a group of well-established professional people, we will get the attention of the media. Because often what the only message that the media and the outside group see is people protesting, throwing things, looks like a violent type of activity, but that's not the whole message of our organization, of our community. We have people who want to take this action to the court. They want to take it to the media, and that's what we have to do as a collective group, because that's when our voices will be heard. And voting is important, but also addressing each of these incidents as a whole, and then as a voice, a common voice, sending out one message that we will not have people terrorizing our innocent men in our community. If a man dies and has no gun and is killed by someone who is trained to use deadly force, who is trained to serve and protect, who is trained to disarm somebody who doesn't have a gun, then no one should die. It should not result in death, even if the person is not complying to the nth degree. There's ways to address that without taking someone's life. If you put it in this perspective, if I disagree with someone or if I don't do what they say, does that allow somebody to take my life, especially somebody who's supposed to protect me? Is there another way that they could get my attention or what have you? And I say the answer is yes. So we as a collective group need to send that message to our community that we're going to do something different. We're going to be a collective fraternity, churches, whoever wants to join us, and we're going to send a message. But we have to do it now, and we have to do it as a collective group.
Wow. Wow, that's powerful. And that's what we're going to be talking about in this series in the weeks ahead, all the way up through the election, but especially up to the election, because as Brother Lawrence Ham said, we need to understand. We need to have the smarts to understand what the implication is of this election. We need to understand strategically what's happening with these mass murders. What is the relationship with this president that is now in place, an African-American, with more mass murders publicly of African-Americans, and I said murders, I did say murders, by, as you said, Brother Kevin, professional arsonists. I mean, these are marksmen. These are supposed to be trained. So this isn't rocket science, what's going on. So again, Brother Porter, I, as your brother, have to pull the hook on you, because I know that you have a meeting that you're late for, and I know your passion is, because I had to push Brother Lawrence off, because I know when I go to call him for Series 2 next week, he may say, Daryl, I can't, because when I get on, I can't stop, and I don't want you to say that, because you know you and I have been going quite a while, so I know you have
a
meeting.
Brother. I appreciate it. Brother Lovett, I'll reach out to you, Brother Clark. I appreciate it. And, hey, let's keep the fire going. We're going to bring the fight to them. All right? Take care.
Well, I'm going to let your brother Todd kind of pick up the torch for while you're on.
I know he will. Go ahead.
Have a good night, right. Brother Porter.
Okay,
have a good night.
Too.
So Brother Todd, you heard firsthand, you know, what your brother is saying about this unity. Earlier we had Todd on. There's a caller, and because this is what this is about. This is about folks being able to express themselves, and so we do have a caller that has expressed that you know they want to have something to say. But I want to come back and after we acknowledge the caller and ask you a question, Brother Todd, if that's okay in terms of, you know, your perspective on something. So let me see who we have here. It's an 878 number. 878, is that Mr. Harrison?
Yes.
Yes, did you want to comment on this discussion at all? Oh, is this Mr. Brunel?
Yes.
Okay, did you have a comment? We have about 10 minutes left in the program, and quite a few folks seem like they want to comment, but did you have a comment about collectively what we need to be doing to make a change? And I know you're very active in the community, Officer Harrison. You're You have won awards for your activity with youth as a police officer. If I can put, I don't mean to put you out there like that, but you've just done so much. What is your comment about this?
Well, my comment is that I just believe that you know, my comment is just a little off from everybody else. Like I just believe that we give up our vote too easily. I feel that we need to hold our vote. You know, we need to get to the point where the candidates come to us, and we're able to give our demands on what we need and what changes we want to be done. But it just seems like, you know, none of the candidates respect black people as a whole, because they know that we're either going to vote for the Democrats, so they know they're not going to get our vote, and the Democrats know that we have their vote. So, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you got to hold your vote, you know, collectively, and to show that, hey, if you want our vote, we're going to go with whoever is saying that they're going to make changes with the police officers that are shooting young black men in the street, you know, the ones who are trying to make some change where as far as the investigation won't be held in that municipality, it'll be held on a federal level, you know, so this way you don't get any collusion and you get some real justice. You know, like, we need, whatever our concerns are, you know, we need to put those concerns together and see which candidate is actually going to actually implement some things and make some changes with our concerns. If we just vote and say, I'm going to vote with, this is the lesser of two evils, as the last time I checked, the lesser of two evils is still evil, you know? So, but, you know, that's just my opinion, and, you know, so that's just how I feel about the situation.
No, we respect all opinions here. Progressive News, as you know me, I'm not here to judge. We're here to have an open dialogue for the benefit of all of us. And everybody, you know, isn't going to be the same complexion. We're not going to have the same voice tone, and we're certainly not going to have the same hair type. And that's what makes us such a strong force. And we're not going to have the same thoughts. So, you know, what you have to say is welcomed. And I'd like to hear if anyone else has any comments. But before that, and if you do, if you've called in on your computer, then you'll need to dial 347-838-9142 and press 1 to comment. And if you already have dialed in on that number, 347-838-9142, then all you have to do is press 1, and our engineer will pick up your line and give you the opportunity to comment, or I will pick up the line and give you the opportunity to comment. But my thought there is, with regard to what you've said, and we go back a long ways, Brother Harrison, but we don't always agree on everything. But still, you got love for me, I got love for you, and you know we got each other's back if something ever went down. So it's not about always agreeing. In fact, I think it's unproductive if there's too much agreement. I mean, I can't think of anything that's really in balance if everything is on one side. Balance in itself, the word, is a indicator of two sides or more. So, but with regard to your comment, I hear you say the lesser of two evils. I'm reflecting back on something, and you may not have been on the line when Brother Lawrence Ham was on from People's Organization of for Progress. And he said, he came right out and spoke on the Donald Trump issue. You know, that's the elephant in the room. And he said, listen, don't get it mixed. And so many, I'm going to paraphrase it. He says, we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where we're back beyond the civil rights movement, pre-civil rights movement. Because if he gets in, he's going to affect the next 3 to 5 justices, a Supreme Court justice. And he is projecting, in terms of what he's saying, it doesn't fare well. And that was his thought. So when you put kind of scenario in the mix, along with some other things that someone could say, such as, because I don't like using vague terms like things and them. You may remember when there was a Central Park murder and he was ready to crucify those men before, you know, justice was even done. I mean, there's some things to look at there with Donald Trump. He is aligning with someone I have a real issue with, Giuliani. So there's some things to be said there about the lesser of two evils. That gives me caution there. I'm going to have to turn the line over because I got plenty of air time because I do this week in and week out, and I need, in all respect for our listeners, let them take the air. Take 15 more seconds and say, don't misunderstand me, because I have a saying and have for the 9 years I've been on the air, left wing, same bird. I get, and I could go on about my disagreements with our existing president. But at the same time, I'm happy to see that he has represented some images that are positive image for children. But I have some real concerns about our existing president. So I feel with you, brother, and we're going to have some more dialogue. As I said, this is the beginning of a series of conversations that we're going to be having for the next upcoming week. And I know you have a lot to say, and I'm going to encourage you to come back because we have about 3 minutes. But if there's anyone else, please press 1. Did you have a comment counter to that before I go back to Mr. Lovett? Mr. Harris?
Oh, me?
Yes.
Basically, I just think Donald Trump is diversion tactic. I think that Hillary is in, but they need Trump as a diversion because he's so outlandish with the things he's saying and doing that Hillary Clinton's deep, dark past is not coming up. You know, she's responsible, you know, for a lot of, implementing a lot of things regarding black men being locked up for drugs, and she has a lot of ties with the CDC and with these vaccines, and she has a whole past of things that she's implemented that has been detrimental to the black community, but they're not coming because Trump is so far out there that it's kind of masking. You know, we're not putting the magnifying glass on her, and it's all on Trump. So I just feel like it's just a big distraction, you know, so that she can get in. I just, you know, there's things that she's responsible for and she's done, and we're not looking at that. We're not looking at what she's done. He's saying one thing, but she can be just as bad for us. You know, I just feel that, you know, he showed his hand more. But the thing is that we currently have a black president. And with the black president, the black man and woman in America is not getting a fair shake. It's already going back to how it was before. We're being slain in the street just like the lynchings, and nothing has happened. There's no justice. So can you imagine if she got in? You know what I'm saying? If it's like this with a black president, imagine if she got in, you know, how less she would do, you know, for us and our community. So I think no matter who gets in, it's going to go backwards. She hasn't been a champion for black America. She hasn't done anything or said anything that's going to straighten this stuff out or improve the unemployment rate for black men and things like that. So I just feel that we're looking at him and putting the focus on him, and we're all going to run vote for her and fear that he's going to be so bad. But sometimes the things that do get people together is when times are hard. Maybe it's meant for him to get in, times get worse, for us to finally stay together, because we're surely not doing it as long as we're comfortable. So I'm just not going to vote. I'm not going to vote at all. And whatever happens, happens, and God is going to take the wheel. And I'll just take it from there. I'll keep doing what I got to do in my community, but I'm not going to vote for someone that has not said anything that they're going to do for me and my community. And then if they do get in and do things detrimental to my community, I feel bad. They can't, you know, people can say, well, you voted for her. So I'm not.
I respect that. I'm gonna reach out to you offline, because when we continue this dialogue, what you have to say is going to be crucial. Thank you, Brother Harrison, for being willing to boldly speak your truth. Brother Todd, before we close, we were having a discussion earlier about the involvement of fraternities and sororities and churches and mosques and the like. Did you have – you are very active in the community with your fraternity. In fact, I need to take a plug right now. My foundation, which is a 5K walk run that I do, and we all know 5K walk runs are, a trend that's been going on for about 15 or 20 years. They've been in existence much longer, but in the last 10 years, 5 to 10 years, they've really spiked in terms of popularity for bringing notoriety to various issues and raising funds. So I established a foundation, a 5K walk run in Plainfield, in my town, to make a difference. This is our sixth year, and we're raising thousands and thousands of dollars, all going to our inner city youth, recreation programs, and less privileged. And it's going to come up, our annual event, October 8th. So those in the listening audience, I'm encouraging to get involved. It's based on five key pillars, always has been and always will be. And no, it's not diabetes or high blood pressure or cancer and any of the other things, and it's not to poo-poo those things, because they're very crucial, and as anyone knows me, knows I'm a health professional, so those are important things. But it's called the Walk One for Life for a different reason. It's for the lifeblood of our society at a community level. The five pillars are to enhance the self-esteem of our youth, to give them something that they can look towards. A 5K or these runs typically involve mature adults. Adults, the average age is between 22 and 38 of a walk-run participant. And these are folks that just want to stay in shape and be involved. And so our walk-run is directed at our youth in our community, and we have all the schools in our district engaged, and the students are allowed to participate for free if they sign a pledge. It's a 9-point pledge. I will do my best in school. I'll respect my teachers. I will not get involved in drugs or gang violence. It has to be signed off by a parent or guardian and their principal, and we allow them to participate, and then they will compete with other schools at their level, whether it's elementary, high school, or middle school. And so that's the first pillar, because they're going to come out and they're going to see folks that are progressive, that look like them for the most part, and they'll have an opportunity to talk and interface with these individuals. Many of these children don't have a guardian to speak to or to speak of. And so that's pillar one. Pillar two, to unify the community. You know, our communities are too divided. That's what we've been talking about here for the last 45 minutes. We're too divided. Divided, I don't have to give you the adage. We fall, united we stand. We're not in mass as we need to be. So that's number two, to unite and engage our communities, to come out, regardless of your political affiliation or your gender or your income. The pillar three is to highlight the legacy and the beauty of that community. I mean, if you think about it, when you were young and folks, white folks might have been afraid to walk up in your communities, and I'm speaking predominantly to my black African-American audience, because I do have a very broad audience of black, white, Latino, Asian, predominantly black. We weren't afraid in our community, because we knew everyone. So it gives an opportunity for others to see us in an environment where we're having an enjoyable time. It's safe. It's secure. So it's to highlight that, yes, we can come together and we can truly make ourselves seen in a positive light. Then the fourth pillar is one that's near and dear to us. It's health. It's about health. We are the disproportionately one of the most unhealthy races, and a lot of it has to do with stress. And then the fifth pillar is to raise funds. So I want to say all of that to say, please come out and support this event October 8th. The website address is plainfieldwalkrun.com. www.plainfield, P-L-A-I-N-F-I-E-L-D, walk, W-A-L-K, run, R-U-N, no spaces, .com. So I had to give a plug, and on that, I wanted to say that the Kappas, we have a one on the phone with us now, Todd, the Omegas, the Sigmas, the Alphas have all participated in many other civic organizations, our local Masons, many churches. That's what this is about, strength in numbers. So I've run myself right out of time. Todd, I'm going to let you close because I know you came on and we were talking earlier about fraternities and your fraternity, and you spoke already about some of what you're doing. I'm going to ask that you join us in some of the series coming up as we talk more about unifying for justice. Todd, anything that you want to say as we close out?
Well, one, appreciate you inviting me to top that off. Just as and I must also say, as a student, I do remember Lawrence Ham. I wasn't sure what he was about, but I was a student leader, and he actually paid a visit to my school at the time. I was taking classes at Rutgers North, so it's interesting how he is still on the grind. But it is all about all of us coming together. And just like I think your caller mentioned, the when we do come together, we can challenge the status quo. We can challenge, you know, what's going on today and let people know that, you know, we won't put up with it. You know, our dollars, when we put our dollars together, we can determine, you know, what we can do in our communities, what we want to get built, you know, really taking back our communities when we come together. And, you know, in essence, as he spoke about the Divine Nine, in addition to all the other civic organizations, when we come together, you know, we can make things happen for the betterment of all, and particularly the betterment of our inner cities and our local communities.
Well, I certainly appreciate that, truly. And again, I hope that you'll, you know, consider joining us as we continue in this dialogue, especially in the weeks ahead. Not that it will stop there, but we will in the weeks ahead be having the discussion of unification and coming together and truly making a difference. That's the goal. And so to all the listeners, without you, this program would not be taking place. Please tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. The archives are up immediately after the program, so if they've missed it, they can go to blogtalkradio.com/Renford and scroll down to the archives until they see Daryl Clark's Progressive News Weekly and tune in. And this and other programs are all listed by date. And so I thank you for listening. If you want to get on my mail list, send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, _CLA18@MSN.com, and then you'll get a weekly email, and you'll know exactly who will be on for the following week. So in the meantime, just consider, it's all about love. It's about us having unity. And as our guest mentioned, we have to have a collective unification en masse. And ask yourself the question, do you want justice? So until the next time, just remember, love will bring us back together, and we will overcome. Peace and blessings. Until next time.